Blog Talk Radio.
Marching all about, and we'll take off to rolling the bar.
And welcome to another episode of Continue Mission. It is April the 28th, 2023, and tonight we have an open mic. But I want to go through the highlights of the week and of the day as it has been reported on the news. And abortion bans have failed to pass in two conservative states. The states of South Carolina and Nebraska has failed to pass the abortion bans that have been primarily supported and only supported by the state GOP. While the state GOP controls both the House and the Senate in both of these states, they failed to be able to pass the abortion ban. Basically, a bill to ban most abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, a strict prohibition that would outlaw the procedure before most women know they are pregnant, failed to advance in the state legislatures. There you have it. So from the conservative states that are, you know, supposedly pro-life, you still have this, you still have abortion. So this is where I'm going to throw the big red flag up here whenever, you know, people say that when certain parties get in control, that certain things will happen. What you find is that a lot of those folks that are in those parties are a wolf in sheep's clothing. And we're going to go into a couple of those today. So let's see here. Other news, four Indiana elementary school staff members. School staff members and a behavior technician were charged after a seven-year-old special education student was allegedly, they always got to say allegedly, even though they got it on camera and everything else, forced to eat his own vomit with a spoon. Here's the names of these people that did this. Sarah Seymour, age 27. Deborah Knipp, 63. 63, you ought to know better than that. Julie Taylor, 48. Kristen Mitchell, 38. And Megan King, listen to that. All women. What happened to the maternal instinct? I just don't get it. I don't understand it. 7 years old, they puke, things happen. They were all charged with misdemeanor failure to report, which, you know, I've lived in Indiana. I can tell you they're going to probably end up with a lot more than that before it's all said and done. So Seymour allegedly told the child that if he vomited, he would be required to eat what he threw up. And Taylor, a life skills teacher, was present and gave the boy a tray, the release says. And basically he vomited and they forced him to eat the vomit and then clean the rest up with paper towels. You know, so I'm just going to say this. So as the grandfather of a special needs child, you know, I don't know what I would do, but I don't think I would just, I wouldn't talk about it. And I'm definitely not going to mention it on the air, but I'm just going to say this. That these kind of things are what degrade us as a society. And I can almost bet that if you go and you really look into these people, I can tell you how they probably vote. Just being honest with you, I can tell you that they probably don't go to church. I can tell you that they probably have some sort of a problem. The main problem being is that they think that they are in, they have this power position. You know, I hated to read this to you, but I know I got a lot of Indiana listeners out there. So you've probably heard about this. In Hendricks County, Brownsburg Police is who was notified. So just in case you need to know where that's at, folks, some of you folks that are out there in Indiana. Superintendent Jim Snapp said in a news release that he was deeply saddened by the action of these staff members. The termination process for Seymour and Knipp had already begun, police said. I'm glad to hear that. And then, of course, you know, all involved employees will face termination when the school board meets next month, and that's good. They need to be fired. They need to be banned from ever being around children. And to be quite honestly, I'm glad they put their names down here. And I would encourage, I'm going to do a screenshot of mine because I hire for jobs. okay? And I do interviews, and we pay really good. But, you know, I'm sure that I would not want any one of those people working for me in any job whatsoever. That's your prerogative. And in our businesses, our private businesses either, definitely. And, you know, some people will say, well, that's not being very forgiving or whatever. But look, the youngest person in this mess was 24 years old. Now, the oldest person was 63 years old. Ridiculous. So it's not younger ones. Look, it's a big mix here. You had a 24-year-old, a 27-year-old, a 63-year-old, a 48-year-old, and a 38-year-old. Hey, look, we covered the whole spectrum of working-age adults here. And they were all women. And that just blows my mind, because I can't help but to think that there should have been one woman in that group that said, dear God, let us not do this. But they didn't. Wow. We just got to move on from that, folks. I don't know anything else to say about that. Let's see here. Peter Pan. Why Peter Pan and Wendy director David Lowry wants to make movies that scare your children. Now, the memo to the internet trolls complaining that the version of Neverland seen in Peter Pan and Wendy feature lost girls as well as lost boys. Take your toys and fly away home. And remember, those reverse directions are second star to the left and straight on until you... He says, for me, being a lost boy is a state of mind. It's that simple, the director David Lowry tells Yahoo Entertainment. Now, those critics crying woke on this casting choices for Disney's live-action update of its 1953 animated favorite. You know, wasn't that Peter Pan was such a good cartoon. I remember that so much. So anyways, he's casting, you know, all these different folks. You know, he's meeting all the demographics. Of course, heavy on the LGBTQ. You know, you're Disney, you know what I mean? You just got to do that. You got to be heavy. Even though the LGBTQ community makes up 1%, we got to put them in 50% of all movies and things that are playing. I get it. Hey, you're making the movie. You do it. You do your thing. But I don't have to watch it. So, folks, don't complain about it. Just don't give them your money. Don't give them your money. That's the easiest thing to do. Let's see here. What else do we got? Now Governor DeSantis is being challenged over claims that he witnessed torture while working at Guantanamo Bay. I never saw anybody get tortured. Never saw anybody get tortured. Saw a lot of people give up a lot of information, but they never got tortured. You know, torturing people is hijacking an airplane with 100 plus passengers that are all unarmed and then flying them around and then crashing them into a building, terrifying them first for as long as you can while you get it lined up. Now that's torture to me. Seems like DeSantis, the only mistake he made was opening his mouth. Sometimes it's best to keep your mouth shut. Keep your eyes and ears open and your mouth shut. I learned that a lot when I was in the Army, and it worked out very, very well for me. And again, I never saw anybody tortured and never tortured anybody. I don't even know what that word means. I have no idea. So let's see what else we've got here. I'm not going to bring that subject up because it's a little bit racy. Let's just stop right there. There's, you know, everything's fixated around, you know, hate crimes, you know, hate crimes against the LGBTQ community, hate crimes against this race or that race. Look, there are bigots out there on all sides. Let me just tell you. If you decide you want to be a homosexual, that's between you, your partner, and God, okay? Now, I don't agree with it. I don't have to support it. As a matter of fact, I won't support it. And I definitely don't want it taught to my kids. That's just the way that I see it. The same thing with the fact that, well, all of a sudden, every white person is now a bigot. You're a bigot. You're born white. You were born a racist. Absolutely the most dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. What does that say about the hundreds of thousands of white Americans, and especially the white Americans that came from Ireland, my family, you know, which I can go back and I can do a history search, and I can tell you that my family, the McCormick family, the Scotch-Irish group that came over from Ireland in the potato famine to serve in the Civil War, we lost a lot of them, including one Medal of Honor recipient in the United States Navy on the USS Signal. And I can tell you, folks, that I'm offended by that. I'm personally offended by that, because what does that say about all of those folks that gave their life to the Union together, which included the absolute elimination, abolishment of slavery? What does that say about all of those poor souls that gave up their life, the thousands and thousands that died of sicknesses and illnesses far from home, never got to go home, or the thousands that were tortured and murdered in Andersonville prisoner of war camp in Georgia? That doesn't say much for those folks. And I personally find that very offensive every time that I see something like this, and it's like, you know, there was a debt that has been paid in human blood and sacrifice, and nobody counts that. You know, I think that, and I'm going to just, and then we're going to get back into our show and bring all of the co-hosts on here, but I'm going to say this. You know, I think that the world went crazy during COVID. I mean, we were already on the way, okay? I'm going to just tell you. You know, I watched One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and I can tell you we're at about 15 that flew over the cuckoo's nest right now. And I can tell you that the nuttiness that continues to just grow and grow and grow is just aggravating. It's just unbelievable what is going on. Treating handicapped children, making them eat their vomit. This is just an example of what you got going on. And you know what? Something will come up. They'll go in and say, well, I was abused as a child and that made me do that. My daddy didn't love me enough. My mommy didn't love me enough. You know what? They didn't spank your butt enough is what they didn't do. And if I was that parent, I'd slap the taste down of your mouth if I had a chance to. And I hope someone does. And I hope they get it on video, you know, because unbelievable. Unbelievable. And you know what's a shame is they probably got kids. The one probably got great-grandkids, you know, or grandkids at least. And it's like, how are you going to look at your kids or your grandkids? And what if you have or you will have a special needs child and you're going to always worry, is somebody going to make my kid eat vomit? I hope not. I really hope not for that child's sake. I really hope not. And hopefully you will have people that are, you know, like myself and others that would be watching that, somebody with that kind of a mindset that would put an end to it. But that's where we're at. Anything goes now. Anything goes, man. You can do anything. You want to marry your dog? Hey, look, man, that's okay. Ask Joe Biden. He'll hook you right up. You know what I mean? He might even let you get married to your pet donkey in the at the White House and use the Rose Garden as your honeymoon space to pop up a tent. Who knows? It wouldn't surprise me. And it's disappointing when you see that. You know, I was just in Washington, D.C. Last week, had some great visits with some really wonderful folks. I actually physically bumped into, met with Marjorie Taylor Greene. A lot of people say a lot of bad things about MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's not very tall, okay, but she is a kind lady, friendly to speak to. But I literally bumped into her, folks, and literally we almost, you know, almost knocked her down. And she wasn't, you know, calling for the Gestapo to come and arrest me. You know, it was an accident. And I ended up, you know, actually giving her a hug and saying, nice to meet you. And I wish, you know, she says, next time, just set up an appointment in my office. So, and I'll probably do that. But what I'm saying is that there are some good people that are there, and there are some bad people that are there, and there are some people that are labeled as bad on both sides of the aisle. Now, I'm going to tell you this, on both sides of the aisle, because I've met some pretty good folks that are called screaming, you know, liberals that do a lot of stuff for our veterans community. You know, I sit down and talk to Tammy Duckworth, and some people don't like Tammy Duckworth. She lost both her legs. Yes, she is a Democrat. Yes, she is from Illinois. Yes, she is liberal. You know what I mean? But when it comes to veterans things, I've never had a problem with her. Never had a problem with her on energy-related stuff either. So, you know, I guess it's the media. The media really sells this thing out. But the media, of every group that's out there, of every president I've ever seen, the media on the left especially is absolutely propping up our current president. Our current president, honestly, and I'm not disrespecting the person, but our current president needs help. And you see that, and you can sense that. Now, you know, the things that are going on with his son and all these other things, you know, I'm going to tell you, you know, it's terrible. It's a tragedy. You know what I mean? It's a tragedy. And it's happening. It really happened. It's not fake. It's not fake news. It's not false. It's not any of that stuff. Look, it's real. This guy is making bank on you and me, the American people. Now, the way we can fix this is everybody get up and go vote on election day. On election day, go stand in the line, okay? Because I can tell you right now, your mail-in votes can be manipulated, can be lost. But if you go there and you stand in that line and you vote and you check that thing out, you know, before you turn it in, you know, we can change this thing. We can change it. We can put it back on course. But I fear that if we don't do that this next go around, then you're probably looking at another war in this country. I'm just going to tell you, it's just, I hate to say it. I'm disgusted by war. I hate war. I've been in war. I've been in two of them and I didn't like either one of them. Okay. But if you've been around long enough, you just know. You know the feel. You feel the wind. And I have a pretty good sixth sense. And it's been tweaking hard in the last 6 or 7 months. So anyways, God bless America, folks. Here we are with another show today. And we've got Katie Fuller and her husband is going to be on here. Katie, you and Rob on there. Do we got you?
Yes, we sure are.
Yep, we're here.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you know, we love having you guys on the show, and I read that story about the child, you know, the special needs child being forced to do that. I cannot believe that happens in schools. I just cannot believe that happens.
And the fact that there were five women. What in the world? They were all, what, just standing around watching this happen?
You know, Katie, I think that adds relevance to what you're trying to do here in West Virginia with bringing these ladies together and the teaching, you know, that whole ladies' tea event that you got going on May the 4th.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Go ahead. Tell everybody what you're doing on May the 4th, because we got people listening, lots of people listening.
Oh, well, I'm helping a sweet lady by the name of Dee Truman. She is, she has headed up this event, and we are going to be doing, we're just going to be having some tea sandwiches and tea samplings and scones and cookies and all that fun girly stuff. Mac is going to be there and his wife and several other people. Just to kind of talk a little bit about himself and his family, and we're just going to hopefully rally around him and support him as women.
Yeah. You know, and the beautiful thing is that you'll just love his wife, you know what I mean? And I know you saw the video when her son got that Purple Heart medal. And
yes.
You know, yes. I was there. I mean, I was in the video. It's like,
yep.
You know, but
sure was.
You know, we need women to step up and to teach the younger girls to be women, what it's like to be not just a woman, but to be a lady, to have some respect. Because if there would have been a real woman amongst those teachers, then somebody would have put an end to that. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't understand it. I don't. I can't comprehend the story just because, you know, out of one side of their mouth, you know, they do something like that, but it's been years and years and years that, especially in school systems, teachers have been pushing the whole bullying issue, and that's exactly what they just did. They just bullied a special needs child. I mean, they used their authority and did that to him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they totally went against, you know, everything that, you know, these teachers have been, you know, trying to supposedly instill in these kids about, you know, not bullying others.
The thing that scares me to hear stories of this is, you know, what kind of teachers are we letting in these school systems? I don't understand why it seems like there are some teachers, not all, but there are some, the bad teachers, the ones who are like these ladies, if you even want to call them a teacher. But it just seems like that they, I don't know, have there's something, were they bullied in school? Were they made fun of? Did they feel inferior? Did they wish that they could have been popular? Do they, you know, what was the deal for them to be able to try to push so much quote unquote power over someone that didn't have any?
Exactly.
That's sick. Sick.
Yeah. That's sick. I really see this as the common thread of activity in America under this radical, liberal, leftist nonsense. This is what it creates.
Yeah.
It breeds.
Yeah.
You know. And we wonder why. I mean, come on. I mean, look at all of the, you know, look, that's one piece of insanity created by, you know, five women of varying ages, you know, the 60-some-year-old woman. That just blew my mind. I just couldn't even believe that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What really is troubling is there's other things out there. There's lots of things out there. There's, you know, there's violence. Attacks, the violent attacks on people has really, really risen. And, you know, people are getting away with it. You know, all you have to do is say, well, that person was a racist. You know, oh, did they say something to you? Well, I thought I heard them say it. And then, you know, they can kill you and essentially beat you half to death and get nothing, you know, no kind of punishment, you know. And
nope. People,
and,
it's people can live their truth, you know, whatever they think their truth is. There is no boundaries anymore. There's no rules, respect, none of that. It's people can be whatever or whoever they think that they want to be. Rob and I went into to Sheetz the other day, and we go in there all the time. Well, this time we were there, and I mean, I don't know who let them out of the circus, but I tell you, it was like some girl came walking in. I'm not kidding. I was like, I looked at Rob and I thought, wow, okay. Some girl came in and she was a fairy. Her hair was dressed in, I mean, her hair was like dyed in like white, sparkly, glittery looking hair. And she had ear prosthetics on that were pointed just like a fairy. And so she had all black on and black lipstick and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, just the way that she was dressed, she looked just like a goth-looking fairy. So we're standing here behind her in line, and then some guy comes in that is gay, but yet he has, you know, the eyelashes and the lipstick and all this stuff, comes over, and he's just like, oh, can I interrupt you for a minute and just let you know you are just so beautiful, and I just love your outfit, and you're so cute, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then he just, the way, I don't get it. I tell you.
You know,
that was such
because,
a day.
Because I know you all. You know, I mean, I can envision the shock on y'all's face. Oh my God.
I don't know. I was like, listen, I just came in here just for a second. I literally turned my behind around and walked out. I was like, this is stupid. This is ridiculous. Man. And we're supposed to act, the fact that is, we're supposed to act like that it's normal. Because
right.
If we were to, like, look at you and say, girl, something's wrong with you, you know, or something, or what in the world, why are you wearing those ears for, you know, or the guy that was, you know, dressed like a girl or whatever. It's just, I don't know. If we were to say anything to them or even look at them in a way like something seriously is wrong with you, then we would be the ones that would get in trouble, or, you know, people would think that something was wrong with us, or we're being racist, or we're being, you know, whatever the words are nowadays. But it's just, it's like we're the ones that aren't normal.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the one that's got the problem. You've got the problem, not us. We don't have the problem.
It's just courage to stand up for what's right anymore, and that's sad.
Yeah, you're right. It does. You know, and I want to, and Rich is on here too, and I got to bring him onto the live mic as well, because, you know, he was making a joke. Now, Rich likes to make jokes because he, you know, because I said I bumped into Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I said, you know, she's not a very tall woman. Well, you're right. Rich, she's about 5'3".
Yeah, for you to call anybody small, they have got to be real small, okay?
Oh, you're rotten, man. You're rotten. So, but, you know, we've got an open mic tonight, and I don't know if Father Pacella's coming on tonight, is he?
I don't think so.
No, he isn't. He's okay. Got teaching seminary all day tomorrow.
He needs it. Yeah, he definitely needs it. You know, and he's got definitely got his work cut out for him as well. So, you know, again, you're looking at some of the things that are going on in society. I think there is this, you know, what I believe is degradation in society. That's what I'm trying to say. And it's, you know, and I'm not going to lay it all on the laps of, you know, just because you're a Democrat, you've done this, or just because you're a Republican, you've done this. I think people, bad people, you know, and mostly people that don't even vote are the ones that are perpetrating the majority of this lunacy that we see going on. You know, the teachers, and, you know, they will have a teachers union that will defend them. And, you know, that's the part I don't get. I guess I fully understand, you know, that there are attorneys that are forced to defend really bad people because everybody's entitled to an attorney and everybody's entitled to a fair trial. You know, that's what America is about. But the unions, I just couldn't see them, you know, belling up to the bar to defend this one. But I have a feeling that we'll see it. And, but anyways, great trip to Washington, D.C. Finally got the roof fixed on our house. Thank you, Lord, for that. We went through we went through some hard times, you know, with contractors, and we have had some upticks in crime around here. So now we have cameras. We have a 360 perimeter around this house now, man. There ain't nobody. I just saw a cat, you know, walk past my driveway. Yeah, we've got this great camera system out good. And then, of course, we got a roof that doesn't leak now, and now we get to fix all the other stuff that's on the inside. So
it's never ending.
Never ending. God is good, though. So let's go into Rich. Any comments on the teachers and this vomit eating incident?
Well, you just only told us a few facts. There's, you know, I wouldn't want to make any registered opinion on this without knowing more details. Okay, I mean, the way you stated it, it sounded like all those teachers were their witnesses to it. It may have been the fact that they learned of it and didn't report it, and that's why they got reprimanded. Okay, it could have just been one teacher there. All right. Now that's clearly wrong. I worked with the mentally handicapped, and anytime they vomited, which they did a lot, you got the custodian in there to clean it up. In fact, usually we had I can't remember what it was, but we always had a pail of it to throw on the vomit because you had to cover it up because it just caused everybody else to vomit too. Okay.
Right.
So I don't know all the circumstances to why everybody else was punished. So I can't comment on it.
Yeah. Well, what I did, I read it straight off of the news report. So that's all.
Hell yeah. And you can believe the news every time you read it?
No, yeah. But I can tell you this, that it most likely happened, especially if the school is already in the process of terminating.
It's likely that one teacher did something wrong, right? Yeah. And then why the others were involved, did it say? Did it say they were in the same room? I mean, you had that many teachers in one room to witness this? I think they were just, you know, learned of it, and they covered up for their fellow friend. And that's and I could be wrong on that. That's just me guessing.
Yeah. If it happened the way that it was stated, then it definitely was wrong. But it doesn't surprise me. And you know, that's the thing, is 50 year or 40 years ago, 30 years ago, I would have been shocked to have read something like that. I mean, that would have just created such outrage, but now you read it, it's like, well, you know, it's terrible. We're upset about it, but you ultimately know.
Actually, you wouldn't have read about it that long ago because the mentally handicapped were isolated in institutions and you didn't know what was going on in those institutions. Mm-hmm. There was, until Geraldo Rivera did his expose on it, the one in New York, that stuff, and that was shocking. You know, what went on in those institutions was shocking, but kept from the public. So no, you wouldn't have heard about it back then.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, what we have is an inclusion program where we try to create normalcy by integrating the mentally handicapped. You know, they go to school with, even though, you know, it's just socializing with or normalization with kids their own age. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's problems with it. And, in fact, because we had that in Oklahoma, I think we call it an inclusion program, but all the teachers had to be educated on that, right? You know, they had to go through special training on how to deal with the mentally handicapped, okay?
So when you worked with the mentally handicapped.
Yes.
I remember you telling me this before.
Yeah.
Tell me, I mean, when was that? I mean, was that a long time ago, or was that like
Yeah, that's before I got, that's back when I was in Oklahoma. That would have been in the 90s sometime.
Wow.
I worked there for 2.5 years. Yeah.
But, you know, I remember there used to be mental health facilities, you know.
Right.
Like we had
Spencer,
Virginia. And, you know,
I think we discussed that last week, you know, the idea of, you know, government institutions, they're usually screwed up. Okay. And, and that's why, and the one I worked at was a private organization with board of directors and things like that. And so, you know, that's why most of the best solutions are investing in finding those private organizations that are successful and fund them. Okay.
Right.
If you look at how the government has taken care of the mentally handicapped, it's abysmal. Okay. Worse than going to the DMV.
Yeah, it is worse than going to the DMV. It is. And, you know, it's
and,
you can
and
go.
I only bring that up because I just say the DMV and the VA are government-run organizations, and you can see how inefficient we are at that. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the thing that I'm looking at as well is all of these school shootings, all of these bizarre, weird things that happen, they're not being committed by somebody that is a person that is well adjusted to society. I'll just say that they're being committed by people that have an obvious mental deficiency that is known by their families.
I wouldn't say no. They may have problems. They're not. I wouldn't say they're mentally deficient. And I think we've covered this in a previous show. Some of the common traits is they're isolated. They come from broken homes. They don't have a father figure. They're loners. The guy that the Air Guardsman who leaked all those secrets and stuff. I mean, they live in a virtual world, but they don't have that human contact. Okay. That's not a mental deficiency. We have a lost generation, you know, and I think we were going to talk, we didn't get around to it, is a new Pew poll came out and said 63%, I think it's Generation Z, is just, they are not dating for various reasons. Okay. We definitely need immigration if we want to keep our population growing, because, you know, 63% of this population is not going to reproduce. Okay.
Well, that's a shame.
And then let's add the 100,000 people every year that kill themselves with fentanyl. Okay.
Yeah.
We have a broken society. Okay.
What do you think? What are you thinking out there, Katie and Rob?
I know you can hear my wheels turning, can't you? No, I feel like today's society, especially, you know, there's too much technology to where you'll see even like at restaurants. Well, we were at a restaurant the other day, and there was these two mothers, and then they had their two little girls with them. But the mothers were talking and socializing and doing their thing, but each of the little girls had a little iPad in front of them. So today's society, especially, we're not teaching our children how to socialize at all. And part of the development of their brains, you know, that's our responsibility, you know, to teach them how to interact with someone when they're sitting down having a meal out at a restaurant, or how to behave, or, you know, manners, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. But just things like that. And nowadays, seriously, you can be 2 and 3 years old and have a little iPad in front of you that you're watching a movie or playing a game or doing something besides socializing, or your parent is going to be sitting beside you, and while you're on the iPad, the parent's going to be on their cell phone. And so everybody is just so disconnected. So no wonder we have all these kids growing up with different problems. Nobody mm-hmm. knows how to, nobody even knows how to handle problems anymore. It just blows my mind, some of the things that we're seeing now while Andrew's in college. The immaturity of college kids, anywhere from 22 years of age, it's scary.
Yeah, you know, we had that conversation. I had that conversation with Andrew not too long ago. We got into some kind of discussion, and he tried to make a comparison, basically telling me how things are different now. Trying to make it seem like I can't understand where he's coming from, because things are different, and he lives in a different world now than what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to thinking about that, and later on I came back to him. I said, Andrew, no, you're wrong. I said, the world really hasn't changed. I mean, the sins that happened, you know, back when Jesus was alive, you know, homosexuality isn't a new thing. It's been around this whole time. I mm-hmm. said, the difference is there is a lack of maturity with your generation that was, you know, it wasn't there before. You all just have not learned how to deal with issues. You all have not learned how to be mature in making decisions. You all aren't growing up and being responsible. You haven't learned that responsibility yet.
It's not important to teach kids anymore how to finance their money. Work ethic. What is that?
Yeah.
There is no work ethic anymore. It's basically there's, you know, they're not all kids, fortunately ours, we can say, is not like this, but most kids in this generation, if they don't want to go to work, or if they don't want to get up, or if they don't want to do something, you know, then because they feel like that they're just, it doesn't fit who they are, or that's just not, it doesn't appeal to them, then they'll just quit, you know, not give a notice or anything. It's just, nah, I don't feel like this fits me, so I'll go find something else. Or, you know, it's just the lack of, who gives a care? One day when we were at a fast food restaurant, you ask for something as simple as no cheese on a hamburger, you know, or something. And it's like you're paying these people $15 an hour.
Don't get me started on.
Oh my gosh. And it's like, wait a minute. Remember the cheese. It is a piece of cheese. Getting paid $15 an hour, remember the cheese. You know, you need to care about these things. Oh, the little things.
I can tell you this, that, you know, I do interviews, and, you know, which I interviewed your son, and he showed up, and he had a tie on, and he was well-groomed and well-prepared. And I just did 2 interviews this week, and, you know, with myself and the president of the company. And this first guy comes on, and he has a black T-shirt on. So okay, well, we just kind of overlooked that, but it was, you know, the other things, you know, just the mannerisms, the not being able to maintain eye contact, you know, background noises. You know, we understand if there's kids or something. And as a matter of fact, we will bring that up. But this was just music playing and things that definitely could have been changed. And this the unkempt look, you know, not even your hair. Now, the second guy that came on had a shirt that was a T-shirt that was all stretched out and had a baseball cap on backwards for an interview.
Yeah.
Now, this is a $55,000 a year job to start.
Yeah.
With full benefits. And it's like, how many of those guys you think we hired?
Right. Right.
Yeah. And it's just like, and it didn't matter. At that point, their qualifications, which, you know, they were okay, but their qualifications didn't even come into play because it was so distracting. And the inability to be able to speak up so that you can be heard. And then I'm always very cautious about the eye contact thing. And especially if you're doing interviews and, because in most of the cases, you know, we'll at least dress in a polo shirt, you know, so that's okay. But these last two, and they were, one was 26 and one was 23, you know, and probably, you know, they just essentially just blew that opportunity. And, you know, we're looking to hire 30. And we're interviewing between 2 and 10 a week now, and just there's just so many. And but
if you can't take care of yourself and your appearance isn't important enough, then what makes anybody think that they're going to do a good job taking care of your business?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, you know, you put them on $2 million worth of equipment. You know, there's a
right.
Yeah, it's. It definitely can be challenging. I just think that, again, I go back to this, and I'm telling you, and everybody that's listening out here, you know, I never voted for Barack Obama, and I never voted for Joe Biden, okay? So even though that Rich has accused me of it 1,000 times and does it probably out of because he knows it aggravates me, But, you know, it wasn't because they were Democrats. It had nothing to do with their Democrats and nothing to do with their race, had nothing to do with anything like that. But it had everything to do with what they stood for and how they carried themselves. And, you know, because, you know, we've had a Democrat here in the state, Joe Manchin, and I have voted for him in the past and have supported him on many things. But not as much now. Because I have just been so soured, you know, and when I watch this society and I sit and I watch this kid come in here who feels like you owe me that job. And it's like they learn real quick. We don't. And we don't have to hire you. I went through 34 resumes, and I was able to pluck out maybe half a dozen that we even would interview that had resumes that were written in a manner that you could at least fully comprehend and understand them, you know?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad. It's really, really sad. And
parents, come on now. Y'all need to step it up. Parents need to step it up.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're letting your child go to an interview like that, oh boy. Okay, I'll try to not. Rob's giving me the look because that's a can't. Oh, here I go.
The other thing that Rob was talking about, and I know you're gonna feel this, Rob. Quality of craftsmanship and work ethic is really bad. Now, you know, we've had a lot of work done on our house, and the roof situation, it's made me cuss. a couple of times. I'll just have to just tell you that it has, and God forgive me for it, you know. You know, these guys were, you know, this one guy was, yeah, that's funny, I know. But it's, these guys were trying to make money off of me. And they did. They made some serious money off me. We paid them $5,000 up front to get started, to get things ready. We paid $5,000 for the material, you know, and so they just started ripping off the roof. I was like, okay, we're going to get right into it. You know, but they didn't order the shingles. They didn't have the felt paper. So they had ripped off this roof. And then all of a sudden, you know, how things happen, you know, God said it's going to rain. And as soon as everything's off, it's raining. And guess what? I had one leak in the bedroom, one leak in the bathroom, and that grew to a leak in four bedrooms and two bathrooms in this house, which you know, when you get that and it gets your insulation gets wet, you know, we got to rip the ceilings and we got to change out the insulation. So that just tacked on $6,000 to $7,000, you know, onto this whole event. And so I went to the contractor, the guy that was doing the work. And I said, look, I said, this was dumb. What you did, it was really dumb and it's going to cost me money. And I'm going to expect you, you know what I mean, to eat some of that. And he just absolutely just about lost his mind. You know, he's like, well, I can't believe you're doing me that way. I can't believe, you know. Well, when they ordered the shingles, and you know, probably I should have just ordered the shingles myself. But when he ordered the shingles, they came in. I said, that's a lot of shingles. Oh, it's big. It's big roof. Big roof. I said, okay. Well, when the job's done, 38 bundles of shingles at $32 a pop. That's sitting there at my house. Yeah, 38 bundles. Now, Heather, she'll tell you real quick, and y'all get to know my wife. She's like, hey, look, she started cussing like day one on this thing, you know. And I'm just and she was fit to be tied, you know, because she's there doing the math, you know, she's got it, you know, that's over $1,000, you know, and then we've got extra wood and we've got extra, you know, but again, you go to the contractor and you say, you know, the guy that you hired to do it, and what really was bad is he took off and he left two workers there, and these two guys done the job and done it well. They did. They put everything together. They fixed everything. They made sure the roof was fixed and they did it on their own. You know, the actual guy that had taken the money, it just essentially took off. And, you know, and I would say, have you seen your boss today? No, haven't seen him, but we're going to get this job done. And they'd go out, they'd clean things up. It's rake things. You know, and they were really trying. And the one was pretty skilled. And the other guy had never done it before. but that's just kind of what you get. But I was shocked that the guy that you originally have a contract with is not out there and doesn't show up. And then when the job's over, the day that they're finishing up the roof, he's sending me text messages. Hey, we got that ridge cap on. Roof's done. When can I get paid? And I'm like, you're not getting paid. I paid your workers, which I did. I went and paid them what they were owed. I said, but as far as I'm concerned, you can take me to court on this one because you have cost me so much money on this thing. And you would have thought that I had scolded a child at the crying and it was just disgusting. Not the nastiness towards me, because he never said a nasty thing towards me like that. He just cried and whined, and I told him, I said, look, I said, I would advise you to go contact your attorney because I'm sure going to call mine. And, you know, the moral of this story is, guy is a product of what? What has created people that think that they can just come in and get paid to do nothing? And literally that guy took $5,000 up front and did not pay his workers, okay? Did not pay his workers everything that he owed them. And essentially showed up every now and then to float around and give some commands and then take off. You know, sad. It's really, really sad. So makes me mad. Rob, right. Let's hear what you got to say about that, because I know this bugs you. The laziness bugs me so bad. Laziness in people. It really does, man. Whew.
It does. Periodically have to, a lot of times I end up working by myself. I'm fortunate to kind of, I'm really fortunate to, a lot of times when I'm out working out in the field, I don't have to deal with people. Sometimes I do, but every once in a while, you know, I'll have coworkers working with me and most of them do pretty good, but you know, every once in a while you run across one and they typically are younger guys, and you can just sense just by how they act that there is that lack of work ethic. I mean, and I guess I take it overboard because I have a tendency of being really OCD with everything. I mean, in my truck, there's a place for everything. When you take something out, you have to do it a certain way, and I just have rules upon rules upon rules, and I sometimes have to talk to these guys like little kids and say, no, don't do that. But, you know, as you were talking about this, and this is kind of like kind of, I guess, maybe a side story of this, or it's not the main issue of what you're talking about. But when you brought it up, I was thinking about, and since it happened with Andrew when he was in elementary school, when he was in public school, one of the things that made us decide to pull him out and homeschool him was, he was so meticulous about what he did that the teacher kept getting on to him and then coming to us about him taking so long to finish tests. And the teacher would constantly say, okay, this is a time test. You have so much time to finish it. And I get that. Mm-hmm. And I get the importance of trying to instill in kids that, you know, there are a lot of things in life that have deadlines. Mm-hmm. You know, once you stick your toe in the water of the real world and you take on bills and stuff, you know, those bills aren't going to wait for you. You have to pay them when they're due. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of the coin, when you are doing a job, you know, you still have to make the effort to, you know, do your best, and if that means taking your time to do it, you know, if you have that opportunity to do it, you need to. And I went back and told, you know, his teacher this, that I said, listen, you know, it doesn't matter what the deadline is. If I make a mistake, I could cost my company millions of dollars.
Right.
If I'm out surveying and I put a stake in the wrong place, and they build a building, and all of a sudden there's a whole wall of a school that has to be torn out and rebuilt, you know, I could cost my company millions of dollars. And so am I going to take my time and make sure that what I'm doing is right? Absolutely. And that was just a story that just kind of popped in my mind when you were talking about that.
Yeah, it's yeah, it was really we've just had a really frustrating because we've dealt with, as you know, with the museum down there in Point Pleasant, and just bad contracting. I mean, and I grew up in a contractor family. So, you know, my grandfather was a masonry contractor. My dad was a carpenter. You know, I worked with my grandfather every summer up until it was time to play football. And literally, I'll just be very honest with everybody, I played football because it was easier to go out and play football than it was to, you know, carry blocks, bricks, and brick and mortar all day long. But I enjoyed football, and I learned about work ethic. And what I can tell you is that those jobs, the meticulous nature, you talk about being meticulous, of a good craftsman, you know, it was the norm. It wasn't, you know, look, you could hire just about any contractor in the valley where we lived at, you know, we lived down in Taze Valley, and they would do an equally good job. Now, there were different prices, but they would do an equally good job, and a lot of them worked together. Now, you know, I have contractors that show up, and, you know, they'll have two or three different, you know, workers that, you know, they have one worker that'll come out and work a day, and then they get cash, and then they leave, never come back, you know, and I can't understand it, but I do blame some of this on the shutdown. I do. I believe blame a lot of this on that there are too many safety nets for bums. I'm just going to say that. There are just too many safety nets.
Yep.
For bums. You can be a bum. You don't have to take care of your kids. You can go out and make babies. And this is these men that are out here. But there's women that are just as bad. But these men, I'm going to stick with men just because I think that men need to start being men again and stop
right.
All this nonsense. But they're not taking care of their families. You know, they make babies. And they don't pay child support. They don't get a job. And society doesn't shame them like they used to shame. I mean, you used to be shamed for not working.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't show up, you showed up to work late, everybody looked at you like, what's wrong with you? You know? And you didn't want to be late. But now you don't even have to show up except for payday. And walk in on payday and say, I haven't been here all week, but I want to get paid for a whole week's work. Or they get some other check. And I just don't get it.
Or they get a free phone.
A free phone, a free car, a free place to live, you know. You know, nobody has to work for anything anymore. That's the problem. Rich Kilblaine, what do you think about that? Do you think it's because nobody has to work for anything? Is that why we're here?
There's a lot of problems with it. I mean, well, there's a saying that hard times make strong men make good times make weak men make hard times. And that's where we're going. I mean, you know, it's that we're, you know, each generation worked harder to make life better for their children, the next generation. And by the time the World War II generation had probably created the greatest period of prosperity in the post-World War II, which is our generation when we grew up. I mean, keep in mind, the baby boomer generation grew up talking the greatest period of prosperity, the greatest distribution of wealth. And you're protesting that? And when their generation grew up and became the CEOs, it was the greatest period of personal greed, okay? So, yeah, that's our generation, or my generation, okay? We screwed it up, and then we, you know, and we passed that on to our kids and made life so easy men, you know, I'm going to call them men by age, are living with their parents in their 30s. They don't move out, okay? You know, and now we have a generation behind that they've given up because everything is being taken. But, and there's an over-exaggeration on that. They work. But I will tell you this. They got competition coming across the border. I'll tell you two traits I know about immigrants. They don't do drugs, and they work real hard. Okay, they come here and they'll work two or three jobs. They want to embrace the American dream because it still exists. Okay, we have in coddling coddling each successive generation, we have hurt them, okay? And that goes back to, like you said, the World War II generation who survived the Depression, survived World War II, made it really easy for the baby boomers. And they resented it.
Yeah.
That's
well,
right.
Today,
that's true.
What do you think about today's? So, what I mean, what's going on today is, look, I mean, it's obscene. I mean, it just, you know, I was out talking to my neighbors this evening, which we still do that, by the way. We still have conversations with our neighbors. We have good neighbors, and we have some that live up the street that are not so good. But you know, we just get along. You know what I mean? We find a way to make it work. But and what they were saying to me was like, you know, I wish, you know, because they were of that baby boomer generation, Rich, that you're talking about, and grew up in the 60s and saw the turmoil of that time period. But, you know, they said, you know, I wish that that's all we had to deal with now. So what you have to deal with now is you have a drug crisis that is out, like you said, Rich, 100,000 people a year are dying from fentanyl overdoses. How many are getting murdered? How many, you know, how many kids? I mean, we're killing the future generations. The out of control birth control use of abortion is absolutely murdering potentially the person that has the cure to cancer. You know, all of these great minds and this the potential future generations. And then let's not even go into what else you said, Rich, because you said some really good things here. And I'm telling you, when you talked about they're not dating, they're not having kids, well, there's a whole generation. They don't even know. They can't decide on what they want to be, whether they want to be a guy or a gal, you know, and they're questioning their own existence. They're questioning, you know, what God made them to be, you know, was a man or a woman. That's it, you know. And I get it. There are some rare.
Well, hold on. Let me tell you, there's the statistics, I think, is when you're talking about the LGBT group is 7%. And that includes those who've experimented with having sex with the same sex who may not identify with that. Okay. So, you know, when you're saying, you know, a whole generation that has an identity problem, no, I would say maybe it's a small percentage, all right?
It's a small percentage that gets almost all the attention on the media, and it is influencing this up-and-coming generation to the point to where I think it will grow. It will continue to grow. It's a cancer on America. It really is. And, you know, that's the way that I see it. And I know some people will think, oh, it's, you know, I'm a bigot or homophobe or whatever. It has nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with replenishing the future generation. You know, now, you know, maybe it's good that they don't, you know, have kids, you know, because their kids might turn out to be bigger buttholes than they are. You know, I don't know. But I can say this, that it's getting tougher. And you're looking around. I mean, our state alone in West Virginia, we went from 5 congressmen to 2 in the period of less than 60 years. Okay, so we're losing a population of people, losing people. Some of them are dying. Most of them are just moving away because there's nothing to do here. Or they're moving away because there's better whatever someplace else. A whole group of people moved here from Arkansas, and then they moved here because there were state welfare benefits that would take care of them for generations, essentially, you know, which, and look, I'm all for helping people. You know, we had television, TV8 News came in and interviewed a bunch of us in the town that I work in. And talking about, you know, the homeless population or the the vagrancy that's going on in the community, and it is hurting business. We're losing businesses. You know, stuff's getting vandalized. You know, I mean, a catalytic converter was sawed off the bottom of my car, our van. I'm sorry, of our for our museum. And I laugh about it and chuckle about it, but it's really not funny. I mean, I had a windshield busted out of my car and, you know, stuff stolen, people fighting in the streets, you know. It's just, it's really, and it's happening in small towns and not just big towns. But what's going on in New York and Philadelphia and Chicago right now is absolutely horrible. It's absolutely horrible what's going on. I would not jump on the subway in New York City now, not for love.
Well, you say it's horrible. This is the thing that I want to point out is I am very grateful that there are 50 states and all these major cities. And why? Is because we can have more than 50 different experiments. And I say for California and Chicago, you know, because Chicago, they just elected another Democratic mayor who turns out to be more progressive than the one they just got rid of. And I'm like, go for it. Let's see how that turns out. Okay. And if it doesn't work, you destroy your city. Great. The rest of us know what not to do. Okay. The problem is when you get national leadership says, we want to do this. We're going to force everybody to do this. No. Let's experiment with it, okay?
Yeah, well.
Find out what works. And then again, what works in one state may not work in another state. So go ahead.
Do you think a level of socialism works? I mean, you've been around.
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, Social Security is a form of socialism. Medicare is a form of socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, the mentally handicapped, and you know, there are certain people that need to be taken care of. The Bible says take care of the widows and orphans. So there's some people that need to be taken care of, but you know, I interpret the Jesus and the fig tree different than, you know, because the fig tree represents Israel, and when Jesus condemned it, it withered up. I also looked at it as the indolent. You know, it's 3 years that fig tree hadn't produced any fruit. And I'm like, yeah, that's like that the person who doesn't work. You know, you got to start. I mean, people need to be helped. Yes, I've been unemployed, you know. It's not that I don't want to work. I want to work. I need a helping hand, you know, to get me from one time to another. So, yeah, we need it. Those are social programs. But what we don't want is programs that encourage people not to work or to get lazy, okay? So that's my thoughts.
Yeah, but the problem with that and you're right, you know, the Bible says that, but that was being done more so by the churches back in those days than what it's being done now.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the government saw how the churches were reaching out and taking care of people and saying, well, if we're the ones that take care of the people, then all of a sudden we have control over them.
Right. And that goes back to my comment about the government doesn't take care of people very well. And that's why, but the problem we have is in the interpretation of church, separation of church and state, is that the government doesn't want to fund successful programs if they are managed by churches, okay? But you're right. It's been the churches that have been taking care of the poor and helping people out for a long time. And, you know, it's like find the programs that work and fund them.
Well,
you know, something that just dawned on me, too, about all this is one of the things that this generation is also doing with all these pregnancies and you know, these kids are just having sex and making all these babies. They are giving their children to the grandparents, and the grandparents are the ones that are raising their children. And I think that's another problem that we have, for this generation, is it's not the parents that are raising the children. The majority is the grandparents raising the children. And that's, you know, that's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Rob said that he went to yesterday, and he met this lady, and she was how old?
This lady was close to 80 years old, and she had an adopted 7-year-old child.
Wow.
Because of somebody in the family that couldn't take care of the baby, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't that sad? That's such a sad, sad thing that's happening, you know, raising kids and you end up raising your grandkids, you know, and it's... You know, I can feel that. I can definitely feel that. I know how that feels. You know, I feel that, and it's going to get even more of a feeling, you know, as life progresses for us. But I do know that that we have made everything too easy. We really have. And there really is, and there should be some, you know, some safety nets for folks. You know, like the single mothers, you know, that's got some deadbeat that took off and left them. But I tell you what. You know, I'm all for helping people, but no, not a hairy-legged man that's strong enough to go to work. I'm telling you right now, we need to put the rod across his back and make him work. Because the men of America, if you could do it and not go to prison, you know, I mean, used to be you'd go down and you'd grab a hold of people like that and you'd slap them around a little bit and say, you better get your butt up and go to work, provide for your family. You know, again, there's no shame, and they have no shame. You know, I've known people.
I literally was just about to say, where is the pride in men like this?
Mm.
You would think that men, I mean, don't you all, those of you all who are true men, real men, don't you find pride in being able to take care of your families?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the most critical thing that I've taught my boys. And if they don't do it, you know, if they don't take care of their families, you know, it's just like the president of the company and him and I talking after that interview with those two guys. And he says, I've got four boys. If they ever showed up to an interview like that, they could be 30 years old and I'd slap the taste out of their mouth, you know?
Right.
You'd say, my God, you know, it's so embarrassing. But anyway, so we've got a caller here, so I'm going to bring him on here. All right. Hello, caller. This is James McCormick. You're on the air. I understand you were a soldier with Richard Kilblaine.
Yes, sir, I was. God help
me. All right.
Hey, keep up the fire, John.
I will. I am. I was going to say something about what Rich had said earlier about the isolation and stuff when you're in school, mm-hmm. or when you're growing up. I was a loner. I wasn't isolated, pretty much. I still isolate, kind of. But, I had some friends, some older friends. You know, from the time I was about 13 or 14 through when I enlisted,
mm-hmm.
that got in my butt when I was doing the wrong thing. And that really helped. And it also helped that I didn't grow up with all the electronics because we couldn't afford anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I credit having a guy that was born in 1942 and kept in my butt when I was doing something wrong. Because my father wasn't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
My father wasn't around. Well, I lived with him, but he wasn't hardly around. He didn't pay attention to anything I was doing. And I could have gone either way. Mm-hmm. But I never once thought about going into school with a firearm and hurting people. Never once did I think that. I mean, when I enlisted, I enlisted when I was 18 on my 18th birthday, and I was on delayed entry for a year. And, of course, I went to Benning and then, you know, basic AIT airborne school, and then I reported to Fort Ord. And when I got to Fort Ord, it was like a freaking ghost town because everybody was gone. But I credit the military, too, for keeping a boot in my ass when I needed it. Excuse my language.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to – that's what one of the things I wanted to segue from this isolation and loners is belonging to something. And so, like John – you know, he talked about, you know, joining the military. You join this family. When you listen to gang members, they join the gang because it's joining a family. You know, I'm an advocate for the martial arts because people, when they join that, most martial arts schools are like a family. Mm-hmm. I know in mine, you know, I want to know as much as I can about all my students, you know, their family and get to know them. Now I want to poke at you on one thing though. And you said, well, you grew up without all the electronics. Yeah. How much time did you spend putting models together though when you were growing up?
Not as much as you would think. I had a car.
Yeah.
And I had a paper route. I bought my first car at 13.
Wow.
It was a 66 Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
And my father promised up and down that he would show me how to fix it. Well, guess who showed me how to fix it? My friends. My father didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, if you had,
you know,
I was
driving around the neighborhood at 14 years old in this car.
Yeah.
No
tags,
once
you got a
no
car,
right,
you
no
got
right.
A lot of friends.
No license, no insurance, no nothing. I was driving around the neighborhood in the car. And my father, he where'd the car go? I said, I drove it down the alley. Okay, that's it. This was a suburban neighborhood in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And I never got caught doing it until my friend Tom, who was born in 42, got in my ass about it. And then after that, I had a Bonneville, a 64 Bonneville, and a 70 Tempest. And, you know, I just went progressed from there. And after airborne school, I got my bonus. And I bought a 1967 Corvette. Which Rich might or might not remember.
Yeah,
the red Corvette, do you remember that, Rich?
What kind of cars you guys had. I remember you telling me about it, but I don't remember seeing it. I drove that piece of crap Volkswagen.
I had a better car than my company commander did.
Everybody did. No, except the Cajun, what was it, the Cajun kid? He had a VW Bug, and he painted it with, you know, all these flowers, and it really pissed the Sergeant Major off. Right. He's the only guy who had a worse car than I did.
Well, I thought you were talking about Ron Klein's VW Dune Buggy that he built. But
well, that was a recreational vehicle, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, but the point is, I never once thought about going out and hurting anybody.
No,
I experimented with the drugs.
Yeah, I mean, there's always been school shootings. We did a show on that in which, you know, I did the research. The first mass school, there's always been school shooting, going back to cap and ball pistols. But the first mass school shooting was the Texas Clock Tower Massacre, okay? And the first school shootings, we're talking the 60s, and he was deranged. And then you have the copycats. It was followed by a couple more using high power rifles.
Yeah, I'm of the thought that because it's almost glorified by the media. They never shut up about it.
Well, they're learning.
That
they're actually learning, and you're right. That was the problem. The FBI has come out and told them, and that's why you'll hear them only mention the name like one day, the name of the person, and then they ignore that person. They will talk about the victims, but as much as the liberal media hates to drop the subject, they've learned they've got to drop it because they want to beat it to death so that they can use this as a vehicle for pushing gun control. But what they realize is the more you talk about it, the more you encourage someone else to do this. So that's why we have these school shootings and people forget about it, and the media will forget about it because they've realized they're the cause.
Well,
they're not the cause, but they helped spread this, yeah.
I live fairly close to Sandy Hook, and there's a lot of unanswered questions about that. A lot of unanswered questions about it. I'm skeptical as to whether it really happened or not. That was during Obama and his push to eliminate semi-automatic rifles. And this who in the right mind is going to buy their kid an AR-15?
Well, I don't think they bought it for him. I think they had it in the house and he took it. I think that it was the parents. AR-15, yes.
Why didn't they go after the parents? They didn't.
Well, they did. In fact, I think in this recent shooting, they went after the parents. And that's one of the things.
Tennessee shooting, even here
in Virginia, they try to push the law that if your kids steal one of your guns and go shoot somebody, that you're going to be held accountable for it. And we definitely got that one shot down, okay, because we can't always control our kids.
Well, I lost all my rifles in a boating accident, but otherwise they stayed locked up in my gun safe. But I taught my daughter from the time she was 4 years old how to handle a firearm. And if she wanted to look at something, I'd gladly pull it out for her and let her look at it. And the first thing she would do is clear it, like I showed her to clear it. So she never had that curiosity.
No, same thing with my kids. They grew up with guns around the house all the time. So, if they want to play with them, they knew which ones they could handle, and if they needed, and I had to be around. Okay. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good for you all for teaching them how to have respect for a gun. See, there again is the respect thing. Now, most of the kids in this generation don't have that type of respect. They think it's like a video game, and they can just grab it and go and start shooting away. There is a respect there that's lost.
One thing I'm very proud of is my wife and I went to a buddy's farm in Vermont with my daughter, of course, and we're shooting. And I taught my daughter how to shoot the same way I was taught to shoot in the military. And by the end of the day, she was getting groups that you could cover with a dime at 50 meters with a 22.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
And she was in the black at 250 meters with my M1A.
The thing I was going to joke about is Alec Baldwin is anti-gun. And if he had a little more, if he had grown up in a gun culture, he would not
have. That wouldn't happen.
Yeah, he would not have accidentally shot the co-producer on that show or co-director. Yeah, I mean, he did like the stupidest thing that anyone who handles firearms knows not to do.
Well, you don't put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to shoot.
And you always be aware of where your muzzle is pointing.
Exactly.
Yeah, those two things right there is what everyone in gun safety learns. But I'll throw this out. You know, because there's a lot more new gun owners, and there's a lot, and, you know, you got some of these states that are just authorizing anybody for concealed carry. It's like self-defense. If you need to know the law. You know, you just can't, like, carry, you know, you have a concealed carry. You pull that gun out. You got two choices, put it away or use it. And you use it, you'd better be right. I heard one person say that just, you know, he told them this. He said when he's teaching them gun safety, concealed carry, you draw your weapon, that's going to be a $5,000 loss, lawyer fee. You fire it, you're now talking a $10,000. No matter what the circumstances is, you're going to be charged, okay? And so just accept it. You know, that's the deterrent against it. But we used to have an organization that actually taught gun safety and marksmanship.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it was?
Mm-hmm. I went through some of that in school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No. Yes, we had that in school. But if you grew up in a rural environment, yeah, you did that. That's what the National Rifle Association used to do. Before it became a lobby organization, it used to teach gun safety and marksmanship.
It needs to get back
to its roots. Go ahead.
Well, them and the CNC.
No, we taught that to the ladies with the well-armed woman. That's a huge thing, is safety to the point where we practiced so much, you know, drawing from our holsters and making sure that our finger was off the trigger. A friend of mine had come over during a meeting and had handed me one of the electric staple guns and handed it to me just like it was a gun, and I took it with my finger off of that trigger just like it was a gun.
Well, that's safety, too. Nail guns, all that stuff. I handle all that stuff the same way.
Isn't that something, how you do it? It's like once you start practicing, it's embedded in your mind. So
yeah,
that's the way it needs to be.
When I was in the military carrying the M16, I felt naked when I got out.
I bet.
Because I didn't have that M16.
Wow. Wow.
You know, it's a weird feeling, that transition from being a soldier to being a civilian. That's a weird feeling.
Mm.
I don't know if Rich can relate to that or not, because he had a different experience, I think, being an officer.
Well, because I had those weapons, okay? Because I always had a lot of military weapons. So I got out, I had other weapons to carry. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is where I live now, I don't get to shoot them anymore. You know, in fact, the indoor range we used to shoot our my AR-15s now doesn't allow us to shoot there anymore, and the closest one is across the river in Virginia Beach. No, I had plenty of weapons in my collection.
You'd be able to go on.
And I did World War II living history. Yeah, so I did reenactments. That was the other thing.
Well, Rich, you just come on over and visit us sometime. We'll take you out into the field.
Okay. Yeah, I need to make friends with a farmer out here somewhere. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, now I play with a cannon.
Yeah, I know. Rev War.
Oh, my goodness. Well, look, we're down to the last 13 minutes. I'm going to let you guys, let's take it out with any final parting thoughts. We'll start with you, Rich. Final parting thoughts.
Well, you know, get involved. I mean, people, you know, if there's anyone out there from that younger generation we've been making fun of or whatever, you know, get involved in martial arts, sports, or whatever. Find something else besides a virtual reality. And develop some social skills, okay? That's my advice. For me, you know, my life revolves around the martial arts, and I can't imagine life without it. And you know, there's a lot of benefits, health, but also the soldiers who come back with PTSD, people, you know, this is a brain injury radio. We're supposed to talk about, you know, people who are suffering issues like that. Well, hey, get physically involved in something. And for those suffering PTSD, I watched a show about a bunch of guys who come back from Afghanistan, and this one guy was suffering, and he goes out there and rolls on the mat in BJJ, and he's like, his mind clears. You know, he's got all this stress until he gets. And it's the same thing when I got into Aikido. You know, is once I got on the mat, I mean, whatever issues I was dealing with during the day, they disappeared because, you know, what I was doing required total focus. So get involved. Mm-hmm. Get involved. I highly encourage. And because of the problem with bullying, definitely get involved in martial arts. And you know, for a lot of people can't. And I think we need to encourage people, you know, the people with money. There's movements now to create organizations that will sponsor young people into the martial arts, will pay their dues, especially if they've been bullied.
Ooh, nice.
Right.
That's nice.
Yeah. I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube, and so I think that's a good movement. So anyway, that's all I have.
Okay.
I agree with you, Rich. I think that's especially for younger boys. You know, they need a way to release that energy. And I think that most of the time when they're sitting in front of a TV for hours playing video games, it's hard for them that energy gets bottled up. They need a way to release it in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hey, James, your friend who has who's a beekeeper.
Yes. Yes. Eric Grandin.
I was talking to him one day, and he was saying how keeping the bees and being around them, and once he's having to focus on what he's doing and getting stung, but listening to the hum of the bees, things like that, he said that's what really got him involved, mm-hmm. and it's very cathartic for him.
Mm-hmm.
So beekeeping, farming, all those things.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely has a way of calming your nerves, that's for sure. And, you know, Eric, actually I'll be in, I think it'll be Wheeling with him next Friday. And I'm sure he'll bring up the first time that we met over 10 years ago. And, you know, he had never done any farming before. And
wow,
got him in going into doing different things. We grew some sorghum, and then he just finally found the beekeeping, and it was like that was his thing. And
that's a good point.
Changed his life. Yeah, it changed his life, saved his life, and he tells you that, and you know,
that's a
Eric,
good point. Finding your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
finding
I'm
your niche.
If I can, on that theme, you know, find something positive external to you that you can do, woodworking, mechanics, you know, find something that you'd like doing and that you have to focus on to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you focus on turning a bunch of wood into a piece of furniture or, you know, figuring out what's wrong and repairing a small engine or a car or, you know, model building, model railroad and all that stuff. You're putting your focus and your attention on that, and you're not thinking about everything else that's going on in your head.
And you're finding a purpose. Everybody has to have a purpose in life.
That's what I think that's happening to a lot of veterans is they're losing their focus. They're losing their purpose. And they're cut loose. They're adrift.
That's big.
Find a purpose.
That's big because when you think about your all's purpose was literally keeping us safe. You were looking over someone's life. You know, you were fighting for others' lives. And that's it. Yeah, keeping each other safe. Right. That's a huge purpose. And then you come back. And so then what? You know, you've gone from such a high to a shoot, you know, down to, okay, now what do we do? So find a purpose. Yep.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I have found that, that if you stay busy and you keep yourself occupied, this is where you're right. They lose their focus, lose their purpose. I mean, look, if you have nothing to do or nothing to be, then there's nothing to stick around for. And
Or you get stuck in your own head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you think about that. You think, you look at, but now I'm going to tell you, they're not, you know, this is just lots of people, especially now, they're okay with doing absolutely nothing. And that I've just never understood. I've never understood that. You know, they're okay with, you know, laying around and sleeping until noon and, you know, staying up all night, and, you know, and getting high or whatever they do. And it just, that's no way to live. So if anybody's out there that's in that, caught in that conundrum, you know, there is a way to get out of that, and that is, you know, to find something to be, something to do, something to...
My mother had a saying that if you don't, you got to be like a shark. If you don't keep moving forward, you'll drown.
Exactly.
She said, if you don't keep moving forward, you're going to drown.
Yeah, that's... That's a smart woman right there. All right, let's go to John. Right, is your name John? And did I get that right?
Yes, sir.
John,
yes,
sir. Party.
Good to talk to you.
Find your focus.
Good to talk to you.
You too, ma'am. My parting thoughts would be: find your focus, find something you like doing, and keep putting one foot in front of the other. Your mission's not over.
That's right.
Your new mission is to find yourself a purpose.
There you go.
All right. And then how about you, Rob? You got any parting thoughts?
Sure. I've got kind of two news headlines that we could talk about real quick or I'll just mention. The first one kind of pigtails off of or piggybacks off of something that Rich was talking about earlier about the homeless crisis, and we're actually more about social experiments, and this is where Oregon is getting ready to start one of these social experiments that he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They have passed a new law that offers more protections for homeless people. And it's called the Right to Rest Act.
Right.
And one of the things that it says that it offers is the bill allows homeless individuals to sue for up to $1,000 if they feel harassed or are told to relocate.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right.
For sure.
All right.
And the other thing. And the other little news headline is effective May 1st for most people who are applying for a mortgage, if you have a higher credit score, which is 680 or higher, there is a chance that you will be paying more in fees than if you had a lower credit score. And they're saying that it could be as much as $500 a year more that you will be penalized if you have a good credit score because you were responsible and took care of your business, you can be penalized for doing what's right.
Yep.
And that just kind of tells me, it's a warning for everybody out there that something may be happening to the housing market here pretty soon. And so just, if you're thinking about taking out a mortgage, be careful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Katie, I'm going to give you the last, you are the last word for tonight.
What?
Get to close
well,
us out. There you go.
No, I agree. I agree with the gentleman that we just spoke with. I think he said it perfectly. Find your purpose, because actually it's selfish when you don't others and you don't have that purpose of doing for others. So that's going to be my theme. Find your purpose.
Find your purpose. All right, folks, and you have heard it on Continue Mission. We're going to close out with prayer. Father Michael's not here, so I'm going to go ahead and close this out with a good prayer, and then we're going to say goodnight, folks. So let us pray. Our Heavenly Father, we come to you today, and we thank you for this day and the many blessings you've given us. We also, Lord, pray for those that are suffering, those that have harder and harsher conditions than we have. A lot of times, Lord, we go through life thinking that we've had the worst day ever, and then we run upon somebody that's really having a bad day. And God be with them throughout their journey in life, and help us as a country to regain our strength, our civility, our decency, and above all things, our ability to be able to think and function as a civil society, honoring you in all things that we do. And it is in the name of Jesus Christ that we pray. Amen, amen, amen. God bless you, folks, and thank you for joining us on Continue Mission. We're here every Friday night. John, it was great to have you. I hope you will come back on. And to Katie, Rob, Rich, I love you guys. God bless you and have
love
a good
you.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for having me. All right.